Hello, friends, ladies and gentlemen. This is episode number 50. And today we're going to talk about music, local businesses, and people. Without further ado, I'm going to start with the first part. As you know, the first part usually involves you being asked about yourself. You have to confirm your ID before you start your examination. They could ask you the questions about your work, your studies, if you're a student, your home, probably, or all of these questions. So let's go on and start with the music, the first part. The first question is, what types of music do you like to listen to and why? What type of music do you like to listen to and why? Well, a couple of years back, I used to only have one artist that I would love and listen to most of the time. You know, I would see if they appeal to my style. But recently, I've been listening to more rap artists. From the previous days, I was much into rap music. And right now, I'm listening to multiple rap singers and sometimes pop music, you know, especially the Latin or Spanish pop music. I'm also listening to a lot of Turkish, German, Russian, and American rap music. And from time to time, I listen to Japanese rap music. You know, also Chinese pop has been a thing, you know, nowadays. So it depends on my mood and what I want to listen to. And recently, especially today, for instance, I was listening to Turkish slow music, kind of like a Türkü. You know, it's kind of like a super deep emotional music. And it's a kind of like a very historical music. It goes way back, you know. So sometimes when I want to feel emotional, or I'm in a very emotional state, I usually go to listening to Türkü, Turkish Türkü. They are deep, meaningful, super emotional songs, but mostly I do listen to rap music. At what times of day do you like to listen to music and why? At what times of day do you like to listen music and why? So I think for me, mostly it's when I'm going to the gym and when I'm coming back from the gym and during the exercising, you know, I listen to a lot of rap music because it goes well with the gym activities. I love training alone. So I could control the kind of music that I'm playing. So I have already have my own playlist. So I start with Turkish rap usually. From there, I move to German rap music, and then I finish with American or Russian rap music. You know, for me, it's much more about the beat and the flow. You know, the lyrics isn't the best part of it, you know, because I'm not really focusing on the lyrics. I'm just looking at the rhythm, which would help me to actually, you know, kind of improve myself. I mean emotionally, you know, get out there and like motivating myself to work out more, you know. So that's my main focus. So the beat, if the beat is hard, is up there, it's moving me, you know. If the flow is good, you know, the voice of the singer, you know, all these kind of things helps to motivate you into working out harder, you know. Did you learn to play a musical instrument when you were a child? No, I never learned how to play a musical instrument per se. I only tried drums a little bit when I was very young, and it wasn't very specific. We weren't even hitting the drums. We were just hitting some kind of like, there's a bucket of some sort. So we're trying to create our own rhythms with our friends, singing and dancing. But we didn't do much with that one. And then later on, when I was at the university the first year, which was a little bit much older, I tried playing the guitar, but I got frustrated. I remember learning the Happy Birthday song for the first time, you know. And the first day I went to the music school to learn the guitar, I was in the classroom with the young kids, 5 years old, 6 years old, 7 years old. Thanks God, I could learn really quickly, and I got the notes for playing the birthday song, you know. And When I went home with my guitar, I practiced until evening and I had mastered it, and I was like, then what? I have nothing to do. So I felt like super empty, and then I just quit and said like, no, this doesn't feel right. It's not something for me. And then I stopped playing instruments. Do you think all children should learn to play a musical instrument? Well, I think this is the question for the people who can actually play musical instruments. They know the joys and the benefits, of playing, other benefits of playing the musical instrument. But from what I've heard and what I've read, it helps to kids to improve their imagination, probably their coordination, hand to brain coordination, hand to eye coordination at the same time, especially for those who are playing pianos, for instance. Though after some time, they don't even have to look at it; they just feel it. They could help. This kind of music could help them to improve emotionally, at the same time, not only, mentally, but also emotionally. The connection of that beat or the connection of that sound of a guitar or a piano, which moves the hearts of people, sometimes hundreds and thousands of people, it could be an amazing experience. And I think for the maturity of a child, it's probably something very important. Moving from the first part, I'm going to read the description question in the second part. Describe a shop near where you live that you sometimes use. You should say what sort of product or service it sells, what the shop looks like, where it is located, and explain why you use this shop. I'm going to repeat this question. Describe a shop near where you live and you sometimes use. You should say what sorts of product or service it sells, what the shop looks like and where it is located, and explain why you use this shop, right? This part allows you to have 1 minute to prepare and about 1 to 2 minutes to talk about this topic. And because it's a description question, they usually give you a cue card and a piece of paper and pencil where you could work and try to find the answers that you're going to give during the speech part. And you can choose whether to write something or not, or just thinking on the paper. I usually call this paper for thinking on the paper part. The description part goes that way, and if they think something misses in your answer, they will actually ask you further questions. So you don't have to worry about that. So just understand the question, think about what you're going to talk about, add the details that you need or examples that you need, and then you're good to go. Okay, then in this question, I'm supposed to describe a shop near where I live, right? So this shop is about 15 minutes from where I'm living. Usually, there are so many shops in the same place, a lot of them, and they're selling different kinds of things. There is also a market in the same place at the same time. Fortunately, I know it's better because it belongs to my mother and it has been so for many years, for decades actually. And they sell all sorts of things, especially food products. And when I feel like I want to buy something for my family, right, I would just go there and buy stuff, because I love to support my mother. I go buy stuff and take this stuff to my mom's restaurants, and then they can prepare something for everyone to eat. Or I could actually buy some fruits or some other things that people could also enjoy later. So I know this shop, and I have worked in this shop, when I was younger. After finishing high school, I lived with my mother for a couple of months, and I went to university. So during this transition period, I was actually working in this shop, and I helped her to see things around when she's not around. Taking care of her restaurant. So that's the end of this part. I'm going to focus on the third part, where we're going to talk about local business and people and business, right? The first question in this part is, what type of local business are there in your neighborhood? Are there any restaurants, shops, or dentists, for example, right? Well, my neighborhood is kind of, when I talk about my neighborhood, right, recently I'm living in a different place, but the place where I usually live is a little bit center of the city. By center, I'm not talking about those kind of like a center super crowded. I'm talking about the place which is reachable, you know, and the transport is much more easier. You know, it's kind of like a modern place, and we have all kinds of restaurants, we have all kinds of dentistry, you know, small hospitals, you know, and hotels of all kinds. So we also have like a coffee shops and theater centers, you know, shopping malls. So we have almost all kinds of things you could think about. You know, there are even some parks, you know, within the same place where you could go actually for exercising, probably sitting down and drinking something, talking to your friends, going by the seaside. You could probably go and play sports and all those kind of beautiful things. Do you think local businesses are important for a neighborhood, and in what ways? I'm going to repeat the question. Do you think local businesses are important for a neighborhood, and in what ways? Well, I could say local businesses are the backbone of the individuals living in that very specific neighborhood, or even if they don't live there, they are kind of like the way they support the growth of that neighborhood, you know. These kind of places tend to have all kinds of shops, all kinds of small restaurants and cafe places. And these places usually helps the locals to earn some money, you know, to support themselves, different from the malls, which are usually owned by bigger businesses. And these businesses tend to benefit themselves in a large scale. And unfortunately, due to the involvement of the new malls and shopping centers, little businesses or local businesses are slowly dying, and a lot of people prefer to go to these malls because of sometimes convenience of the prices, you know, because they're already big, so they know they could serve a lot of people and make a profit anyway. And the local businesses are being hurt in this way, but I think they are really important, and they are part of what makes a neighborhood the way it is, you know, their definition. For example, only about 5 minutes by a car from where I'm living, there is also another very popular neighborhood, and in this neighborhood it's known for luxury shops, you know. For this place, the way it is, it's we could say these are the local shops of the place, because the owners of these luxury shops or luxury local businesses and restaurants and those cafe also are the individuals who are living in the same neighborhood. So in one way or another, it's also helping into the development of the neighborhood itself. How do large shopping malls and commercial centers affect small local business, and why do you think that is? I think I had answered this before even being asked the question. So I'm going to give more details about this part, you know. So the large commercial centers tends to be dominant. You know, they have bigger budgets, they can do advertisements, they can attract all kinds of people to the place, and also they can afford to take more risk. So they tend to grow faster, and because of the discounts and probably the availability of most products, varieties of products, most people are attracted to go to these places, because when they go to the mall or big commercial centers, they could enter, spend hours, they could eat there, they could play there, you know, they could do shopping, you know, they could buy different kinds of things, you know, they could also decide not to buy but still enjoy the place at the same time. So they don't only produce, they don't only serve by selling things, but also they give other services. So it's some kind of like a lifestyle place, you know, whereby anyone who goes there, no matter whether they have the money or they don't, there is one or another way to enjoy themselves. They even have game places, you know, like arcades in old days, and also, you know, racing games. You know, they also have theater, you know, where you could actually go to watch a theater play, for example, or probably watch a cinema, you know, a movie. And sometimes they even have this huge one. I know in Istanbul they even have an opera, you know, and international artists are being invited to this place. You know, they have the conference halls, so they have almost everything, which makes it almost impossible to resist if you want to have full experience. And this is unfair competition for the local businesses. All right, let's talk about people and business. Why do some people want to start their own business? Why do some people want to start their own business? I think this is a reason for most people, probably, but for myself, it's usually about the freedom. The big risks that you're taking might be causing stress, but once you're used to this kind of life, you actually enjoy the freedom at the same time. When you own a business, you kind of make your own decisions. Everything is up to you, but it's very risky because if you're not disciplined, if you're not a hardworking person, if you cannot handle stress, you might end up actually giving up or failing miserably, and you'd wish that you had a proper job, like a day job or something like that. So it's a big risk, but also it gives you a freedom to exercise your creativity, breaking the limits, deciding how far you want to go with your work, and things of sort. Are there any disadvantages to running a business? Which is the most serious one? As I have mentioned before, there are some disadvantages of running a business, like loss, responsibilities, because you're not only responsible for yourself, but also the team that's working with you. And also, it's a big risk. You're putting your money there, sometimes for advertisement, sometimes for improvement. You put your time, trying to build something, and sometimes you might work for years and end up losing instead of earning. So it's the experience themselves. It's the experience itself that you should be focusing on. And I think the most serious thing that you might have is probably losing your business. If you're having your own business, it hurts when you have worked so hard for so many years and you haven't even started to enjoy the profits of your hard working, and then you lose your business. Some people even lose their mind, when they're in this state. So you have to be careful with this kind of possibilities. Unfortunately, a lot of entrepreneurs or business people who start especially small businesses, they usually overlook the fact that they might lose everything and they might end up with nothing. And they probably, instead of investing wisely, they probably pour all their money in one place, or they don't have some savings which could help to be a backup plan in the future. What are the most important qualities that a good business person needs, and why is that? Well, I think the first thing that a business person should be looking at, or the first quality that a good business person should be looking at, is perseverance. You have to be persistent, you have to be very patient, you have to be a very hard-working person, and more importantly, you must be very creative and you shouldn't hold back. You have to go out there and tell the world what you can offer, especially when you're offering a good product. Unfortunately, some people who are really good at creating good product, and by product I mean both the product as physical product and service as well, they are capable of producing or offering really good services, but they're not good at marketing, and that's where most creatives fail. You might find this person who is really good at creating, maybe building computer programs or software, or probably they are magnificent tutors, or they're probably very talented in a very specific thing, but they only lack the ability to market themselves and sell. And these end up to have a lot of unqualified businesses of low quality, but making very high profit just because they are very good at marketing their own businesses. So this is unfortunately one of the negative parts, but as in accordance with the modern definition of business, as a good business personality, you also have to have really amazing advertisement skills. You have to know how to put yourself out there, and encourage people to understand how good your product is, so that they would make a decision to buy this product. Another thing is your ability to calculate the risk, because a business means risk taking. You never know if something that you're investing into is going to pay off. And if there is no element of risk, you're probably playing very safe and you cannot call it entrepreneurship. So the thing that you're supposed to be doing is taking risk, but very calculated one. And if you are not financially very capable, you have to take a very calculated risk.
Instead of taking risk with everything that you have, you could instead work harder than normal. They say an entrepreneur is a person who is not ready to work for 40 hours in a job, but ready to work for 80 hours on something that he really loves doing, like their own work or something like that. So entrepreneurship isn't about freedom. When we talk about freedom, people think it's like you just being relaxed and having a beautiful life just because you own a business. No, entrepreneurship is actually working harder than a person who has a normal job, because you are more responsible for the people, for your own businesses, and you're taking risks. So it's a lot more hardworking than the normal job. So if you're an entrepreneur and you think you need to relax and sit back, probably you're not using your potential, or you're not a real entrepreneur that people are expecting you to be, unless you're some kind of an investor, whereby you could just be putting your money somewhere and just waiting for if it pays or if it doesn't pay. But even that, you have to have enough knowledge about investment. You have to do research. You have to constantly communicate with the businesses and see which product is for the future. Otherwise, after a few years, you're gonna be very, very irrelevant. So that's it, and that's the end of this episode number 50. And I'm sure you have a lot of questions, so don't feel reluctant to contact me through my social media accounts. And if you feel like you need to listen a couple of times the same episode, please do so, because sometimes it takes more than one or two times of listening, to actually understand what's going on. And when it comes to the way you try to improve yourself, probably practicing your English skills, you must make sure that you practice enough. And also during the practice, you have to see where you go wrong and you make mistakes. If you can hire a tutor to help you into achieving the best IELTS score, there are specialists out there, so take advantage of them. And knowledge is priceless. There is no money enough to buy knowledge. So if you can afford taking extra classes with a very good teacher, then do so. When people decide to, this is going to be, we have already finished the episode. I'm just going to add some notes on how you have to go upon approaching a good tutor. Some people just pay because they can afford it, and they think this will help them to be able to achieve a certain goal in their language learning process. Do a good research with a tutor. If it's possible, try to ask them for 1 or 2 hours of trial lessons. Try to get some recommendations from the people who have taking lessons from them. And nowadays you have a wide arena to play, because you could both take face-to-face lessons and also online lessons, so you have much more alternatives for good tutors. So don't spend 3 months or 4 months with a tutor that you only searched for 5 minutes. So do research, try to reach a good tutor, and good tutors are not necessarily popular tutors, but sometimes popular tutors might be good teachers. So try to find someone who is very convenient for your needs, and try to know what you want to practice and why, and when do you want to take the examination. After calculating all these possibilities and you're satisfied with the tutor that you're going to work with, then make a program with the tutor, but also you should make your own studying program. And this is the part where you plan. And also, there's another part that I have talked about before, which is planning. You have to know what exactly you're going to do every day, especially in the transition period when you're preparing for your IELTS exam, even if it's irrelevant to the exam itself. So you have to have a timetable. Having a day where it feels really empty and you don't know what to do leads you to ending up doing things which are not productive but destructive, because having free time doesn't always mean something good. If you don't have anything to do, you have two choices: whether doing something positive or something negative. So if you do something negative, you're destroying yourself. If you do something positive, you're building. If you have your own timetable, that's good for you. So if it's free, okay, and this free time if it says I'm going to do whatever I want, then that is psychologically constructive. We could say that, you know, no matter what you go and do, it's positive because you maintain your self-esteem. This was my plan and this is what I wanted to do. Nothing or whatever I want, you know. So that's the importance of planning. When you're organized, when you have plans and when you have the maps, it has to boost your self-esteem. Deep inside, you believe that you are a good person when it comes to following your own routines. You believe you're a disciplined person. I usually believe discipline is more important than motivation. I told you in a few episodes ago that discipline is constant. Motivation comes and goes away, you know. So if you're a disciplined person, it doesn't matter if you're motivated or not. You have to go out there and do the work, you know. So that's why discipline is very important. So I won't spend more time talking about discipline and motivation because this wasn't an episode for that specific thing. But I'm wishing you all the best and good luck in the coming examinations. And share this podcast with your friends. Help them to learn the way you're learning. And thank you very much for your time and being such a responsible person ready to improve yourself, hence improving the world in general.